here's a chance to get the Audible audiobook read by me free. Here's how it works. If you have a subscription to unknowncountry.com for a year or more on January the 12th, you will be automatically entered into a drawing where we will choose 50 unknowncountry.com subscribers to receive free New World audiobooks. If you're not an annual subscriber but would like to upgrade, that's simple to do. Just enter your account and find the upgrade button and take it from there. If you're not a subscriber at all, now's the time. Get a 1 year or more subscription to unknowncountry.com in order to be entered into this drawing on the 12th. Winners may cancel their subscriptions at any time, of course, but if you win the audiobook, you will not receive a refund for the first year of service. So go to unknowncountry.com and sign up now for a year or more. There will be another drawing like this later on in the year. And other premiums also are going to be offered throughout the year. So enjoy the site and enjoy all of the benefits of being an unknowncountry.com subscriber.
This is Whitley Strieber, and this is Dreamland. You've reached the edge of the world.
Well, today, an old friend returns to Dreamland. He has been on this show at least since we started keeping records. The first show I have in the archive is from 2005. I'm talking to none other than John Hoag, who comes on the show generally twice a year in January and in July. And with a few breaks, that has been a consistent pattern for a long, long time. And during this period, we have had some remarkable experiences with John. He is a futurist and a prophet and one of the world's absolute leading experts on Nostradamus. Always absolutely fascinating to have with us. And of course, this is our January show. So we're going to be talking about what will happen in the future and taking a look back, not just at the last year, but at the last 10 years, because after all, a decade has passed. John Hoag, welcome to Dreamland yet again.
Thanks for having me. I mean, I think in my records, we go back even into the 90s.
Well, I'm sure we do, but unfortunately, I don't have records back that far because Clear Channel, who was running Dreamland in those days, failed to keep copies of the shows. So
I remember it was the Sunday show, Dreamland on the Sunday.
Well, you do go back because Dreamland was a live show on Sunday evenings and then later Saturday evenings. And then it became a podcast, and it has been – I've been doing Dreamland since 1997.
I know. That's when I started with you. Yeah. So started with Art in 94, and then this happened.
Yeah, and then I came along, and you started with me. So you have been with us for a long, long time. And the reason, folks, is very simple. He has a lot of hits. He's got misses occasionally, too, and you can be sure if he does have a miss, people are going to be roaring about it, but not so much when John has hits. And why don't you tell us about some of your hits in the past, John, before we really get into the nitty-gritty of the show?
Well, I anticipated the last recession by a year. Back in 2008 and 2007, I was already warning about it.
Right, and you can hear it in the Dreamlands we did in 2007.
That's right. And then, and then, of course, there's always the accuracy I have with the popular vote predictions since 1968 that are 13-0 for who wins the popular vote in every presidency.
And you've changed this phrase to who wins the presidency to who wins the popular vote. Why is that?
Well, I had to. That was one of my mistakes. At the end of the last one, I mean, this happened a little bit in 2000 with Gore as well, is that I just assumed, which I will never do again, that so many people have been hearing me and reading me, I didn't have to be a broken record saying popular vote, popular vote, popular vote. But as you said, and it's very true, on the rare occasions when I'm not being clear or people have it in their mind that I was wrong, it's amazing how vicious some people get about that.
They really do, because they want to not believe that prophecy is real. And for most people who are prophets, it's not.
Yeah, it's potential. And what makes it real is our predictability factor. It's how much the society unconsciously programs people to literally be seeded with their education into a world of being a personality, a mask, an identity, the same seeds that make them repeat the past in the future. And that's essentially what I'm tuned into. I have a knack for seeing how collectively unconscious mass things happen, and there it is. And the thing is that my mistake with Clinton is in the last few weeks I was so exhausted from the whole process that I stopped saying it. It's funny because I was feeling as I was writing a book about her, I stopped writing it. And I was like too tired to even look at why, because she wasn't going to be president. But I always had said it was by popular vote, and I even predicted that it would be 2% difference from Trump in the popular vote, and it was. But you know, it was like, so that's just one example on rare occasions. I mean, the other thing that happens to me sometimes was the very accurate predictions that I made on a national Fox Network show called Prophecies of the Millennium, and that was filmed in 1995 and aired in March of 1996, that ended up actually doing a CGI special effect showing the towers, the twin towers of the World Trade Center going down in a small terrorist nuclear explosion from the sky. And it was something that I evolved since 1983, and then when it was actually happening, I was on the phone with networks, and I was on the phone with Fox and saying to them, hey, you know, we did this. We should all get everybody together and do a new show once and see what we got right, what we got wrong, and what may be coming next. And they loved the idea, and they were literally in the middle of a war room down there. And they said to get back to me, and then I didn't hear from them for 2 years. I finally found out from the subcontracting producer 2 years later why all was silent. He's like, said, you don't know what happened to you with Fox? I said, no, they didn't tell you? No, nobody told me. He said, you were blacklisted. You were blacklisted because the suits up in the higher offices, they had broadcast the only repeat of that show 3 weeks before 9/11 happened on FX channel, the Fox affiliate across the United States. So it was repeated again just a few weeks before it actually happened. And rather than look at the value of somebody who has a gift sometimes to see these things happening, and the other people that were on the show as well, the reaction that happened to me is exactly the kind of reactions Nostradamus encountered when his prophecies for his own time started happening one after another. You're entertaining when at the beginning, but when you're accurate, no accurate prophecy or accurate prophet goes unpunished.
So yeah, no man. Well, you know, I have that same problem because I'm something of a prognosticator, if not a prophet.
You're up there with H.G. Wells and Jules Verne. You know, you're definitely, you know, you've been very accurate.
Yeah. Well, I have been. That's very true. So let's go on now, though, and down the road. And, you know, one of the things that happened is that in the last election, Hillary Clinton won it by, I think, 3.9 million votes.
Yeah.
Now, I saw an article recently that someone could win the popular vote right now by 7 million votes and still not be president. And, you know, I think the system has become so distorted that that should not be the case. We should not have minority presidents because they always run into trouble. That's what happened to Bush. George W. Bush, and it's what's happening to Trump. Minority presidents have problems, and they, you know, I'm not a political commentator. I'm not going to go into these problems, but we should have some kind of a change in the system where you can be sure that the popular vote will elect the president, because it's not really one man vote, one vote now, is it? I mean, at all?
No, so, it isn't. But you know, it's funny. I've had an interesting struggle with this. I as it's gone along, I am at least, I'm not saying I support it, but I'm at least understanding the conundrum that the founding fathers had with the danger of one state that's got more. Here's how they figured it out. They figured that the Congress, being by population, the House of Representatives, would counterbalance the idea of the two senators per whatever size of state, so that there wouldn't be a and in a similar way, that's a long story. There's a lot of things about the Electoral College that are even rooted in racism and persecution of black people, but I can see it. I'm still trying to figure out in my writings how to solve the issue of having a big state like California or Texas having the power of being so populous that basically they pick the presidents anyway, and we have a similar problem if we just have popular vote.
Right.
And that's a big turn for me, because I've been often writing against the Electoral College for a long time, but I'm not so sure. Something has to be fixed, though. We have to find a balance. I'm actually writing about this in my forthcoming book, which I'm working on now, called The Roaring 2020s.
Nah.
And which is going to be a 10-year plunge into the future. And we begin it this new year.
Last July on the show, you talked about two books. You talked about a book that is a redoing of the whole Nostradamus prophecy, all of the Nostradamus prophecies. And then also what interested me a lot was a worldwide survey of prophecies from the past about climate change. And you came up with a really startling response. Can you talk about those two books a little bit?
Yeah, I am in the next 5 years, I am taking on my bucket list of books that I thought I was going to be writing much farther down in the future, but because of the changing developments in climate change and other issues, economy and all that, I am now put these to the forefront. And one of them is a redoing of my 1997 bestseller, Nostradamus, The Complete Prophecies, as now a two-volume, about 2,000 pages, that will be the ultimate Nostradamus book ever written in the last 4.6 centuries. And it's kind of my farewell to that. I mean, it'll lay down what's going to come after that and pretty much finish my karma with Nostradamus, pretty much. And that's also going to include a lot of things no one's ever seen in English, like complete translation of all his prose prophecies from 1550 on to 1559. So this is like 5 years even earlier than the ones people are usually aware of, starting in 1555. I have a huge chart on my office board here with all the prophecies laid out and color coded to what place they're in, and I'm in it now, and it's going to be an amazing book, which is going to look at all the things I've said about Nostradamus and kind of amalgamate them into this huge work. That's the first thing. The other thing that's happening is it started this year coming to an end. Well, that has come to an end in 2019. I became aware that I had to jump upon the thing I've been preparing for 30 years, and that's the collecting of all these different visions and prophecies from all different time periods that very clearly indicate global warming is real and it's coming, the rising of the oceans, the heating of the atmosphere, the great droughts, the superstorms. A lot of things that we're beginning to experience directly now have been foreseen in all the traditions of prophecy, especially if you can look at them beyond the Sunday school or Friday school or Saturday school, considering what prophetic religious tradition you come from, and you can look at them without the projections of the formalized religions, but just as if you were seeing them fresh. And they all indicate that we are in this. But this book is unique because it will be the first time in this annals of prophecy where prophets, subjective seers, are backing up the documented scientific forecasts of the last 200 years or farther back. I've even found where scientists were aware of this situation with the warming of the climate. And ironically, scientists who served the very engines that created it, the coal industry in the 19th century, they were concluding this in the 19th century. All the papers from ExxonMobil who foresaw this, the scientific reports, I'm quoting them in this book, where they knew this was coming and they repressed it. So you know, when people say, "Oh, is it not really happening?" and all that, I said, "Well, I've got the sources. The very people who are making it knew it was happening."
Yeah, right, Exxon just recently won a court case saying that they weren't liable for lying about climate change, which they have obviously been doing for a long time. Their own internal reports from the 60s and 70s show that they knew. Yep. They knew what would happen, and they're still lying. In fact,
well, it's a repeat of Philip Morris and the tobacco industry all over again.
Yeah, with the difference that we do not have any, we don't have any political will because we don't have any public will to change this and to do it. I mean, what's happening in Australia right now? The people are beginning to realize that. The politicians are completely out to lunch on the situation. The country is drying up and burning down.
It's amazing what's going on down there.
And the prime minister just said yesterday that we will have no change in our climate policy.
Yeah.
I mean, he's, and my guess is he might be reelected because there's a huge head in the sand issue here. Yeah. People can't handle it. I mean, I don't blame him. I can't handle it. When I'm with my grandchildren, there's a part of me that is just dying a thousand deaths. And, you know, when you talk about, let's do this. We're coming up close to a break and what we're going to be doing in a minute is going to be pretty long. So I'm just going to take that break now. Okay. And, Free Dreamlanders, enjoy these commercials. And as always, think about subscribing. You guys never do. I mean, actually, that's not true. More and more people are subscribing. And the reason is that they are finding out that this is actually worth doing. It is really worth it because the wealth of information on this site is amazing. We'll be right back.
When Plato's ancestor Solon received the story of Atlantis from this Egyptian priest, the Egyptian priest said to him, "Many and manifold are the destructions of mankind. You know of but one. But you Greeks are like children. There are many, many destructions of mankind by all various types of means."
That's an excerpt from a show with Rand Flemath, who wrote the original book about crustal shift that is based on the theories of Charles Hapgood. There are three Dreamlands with Rand over the years. That one's from 2015. He goes all the way back to 2004. And they are totally relevant and totally fascinating right now. All you have to do to locate those shows is go to our search engine on unknowncountry.com and input the words Flemath, Flem-ATH. His last name, and all of the shows will pop up. And then if you want to listen to these incredible programs, literally available nowhere else on earth, as far as I know, you can subscribe to unknowncountry.com for $4.95 a month or $39.50 a year. And when you do, you get a literal wealth of enjoyment from this website, including the full length Dreamland every week, every new Dreamland that comes up. So subscribe to unknowncountry.com. Go to the site and click on the subscribe tab. Get started. We're talking to John Hogue, his website, hogueprophecy.com, a wonderful site. You can get his free newsletter. He sends it out very reliably. Why do I know that? I get it. And it is, it's a good place to go. And his books, well, there are so many of them. I can't say that they're not fascinating. They are absolutely fascinating. Over the course of this show, we're going to be talking about all kinds of things. We're going to be talking about Brexit. He's got some thoughts about that, an astrological reading of where the UK is going to go because of Brexit. We're going to be talking some surprising stuff about the visitors that he doesn't know about yet, but we'll find out. So it's going to be interesting for sure. But before we left the air, I was getting ready to ask you about the prophecies about famine that you have found in the past. There are a lot of them. Can you talk to that a little bit?
It is the key threat in all the traditions, whether they are talking about the worst-case scenario of a sudden nuclear war that no one expects, or whether they're talking about the more slow-moving catastrophe of the planetary climate changing, they always end with the largest threat to human survival being the issue of the breakdown of food. The breakdown of food in a nuclear winter is obvious, but the breakdown of food after we pass 2 degrees Celsius, this arbitrary limit that the politicians in the Paris Climate Accord set without consulting the science. A lot of the scientists are saying that it's just we're already done, baked enough into the system to pass that line. It's only is a question of when. And what my book is showing is that it's coming much sooner than they expect, and it could come as soon as 2028 or 2032, because the parts per million acceleration of more CO2 in the basic measurements of parts per million is now around 412 to 417. We're adding 2.5 to 3 parts per million a year, and if you look at that estimation, with the curve only going to be increased because there's really no sign that the human race for the next several years even is going to stop this record-breaking pollution exhalation into the system that is going on right now, which we want
to
see.
It's going to increase, not decrease.
It is.
It's going to increase because China can't get ahead of it. No. Russia won't. No. India won't. Brazil won't. In fact, Brazil is even proactively making things worse by burning down the Amazon, which is going to be burned down probably in its entirety, and the whole jungle. And this is going to happen. It's unavoidable.
So I'm going to get to the critical mass where we're going to look at when human beings might finally have the collective alarm, drop their trifling ideas, which they think are so important, and wage war against their own stupidity for the sake of their survival. But I'll hold on a moment for that and just talk about the famine situation. Nostradamus talked about it a lot, and he talked about it. He said, I foresee a great famine coming that would – and Hildegard of Bingen also saw this, and many other great seers from different times. And in her case, she talked about how it would happen into the countries of the New World, which hadn't even been predicted yet, even in America and North America and stuff, that she used different phrase, which is pointing to, over the sea in the West.
Yeah, they hadn't even been discovered by Europeans at that point.
Yeah, and Nostradamus even called it Amerish or Amorica for America. And he said it will be sporadic sprouting here and there this great famine, and then it will become worldwide. It's no nebulous phrases at all. He's right out there with it. So it will be so far-reaching and comprehensive that people will steal bark off the trees and rob babes from the breast. And you know, he's basically, when you tie that into his famous prophecy Antichrist quatrain, century 2 quatrain, 4-line verse 62, the coming of the third and final Antichrist, who's Mabus, who may actually be the fellow we call MBS in the news because his name is too long, Mohammed bin Salman, the crown prince of Saudi Arabia. It's during that time where he says there is an unraveling of the world of people and animals. That's his 16th century phrase for the climate catastrophe.
Which is happening, because if you just go outside into your own backyard and listen for the birds in the spring, their voices are disappearing. And in Europe, it's even worse.
Yeah.
They're just gone. And the Europeans have made efforts to suppress the use of genetically engineered crops and pesticides, and still these creatures, which are so fundamental to the food chain, are disappearing. Birds and insects, you know, the food chain dies from the bottom up, and that's actually happening.
Well, the needlefish, the little insignificant needlefish that are a basic foodstuff for the chain of feeding animals along Alaska's coastline, is literally seeing St. Paul Island, which used to be crowded with seals and birds, is just empty now.
That's
they
so scary.
Disappeared. And so it's, I mean, these now, you know, there's a few reporters out there, very brave man, Darja Mail, who works for Truthout, that's been a very good correspondent on being at the forefront of all this scientific stuff and on the ground, eyeballs to the what's going on all around the world, and he should be on every national news show every day, because it's literally, we're talking about things that will extinguish our future, everything.
You know, we talk about this on Dreamland just once a year, and the reason is it's too hard to bear. And, you know, the show, your show, used to, in the early days when we weren't worrying about this at all, it was got huge numbers. The numbers are not as big now because people will tune it out because they can't handle it. I feel the same way. I don't want to think about it either. Nobody does. But, and for that reason, instead of going into the nitty-gritty of what we all know is happening, I would like to talk about what we, if there's any good news anywhere in anything, or if I'm going to talk a little bit later about the visitor's take on this, because that's an important part of it in my life, and it's a big deal. So we're going to do all of that. And now, going back, though, to those prophecies and to the situation, what they're really talking about is the failure of the Midwest to grow crops, that and Central Canada. They are talking about a drought that would happen in that area, a protracted drought with more than two seasons.
Well, yeah, I mean that's probably that kind of thing is already going to start before we bad seasons and crop growing is going to, starting in this new decade, is going to become more dicey. The danger is that when we pass 2 degrees Celsius, the chaos in the weather patterns, storming as well as drought, become to such a level that it disrupts the very fragile ability for crops to be grown properly to scale for the 8.5 billion people that will be on the planet around the time of the 2030s begin. And so that means that it almost fits with the pattern of Nostradamus' prophecy. It'll turn up here and there and there and there, and then suddenly it's everywhere. And they break down the ability to grow grains to scale. Now, part of that problem has been the very dangerous move of industries to do a monoculture of just one or two grains being produced all over the world. If those grains fail, that's all your bread and rice and stuff is gone. And that will literally take out one out of every 10 people, only one will probably be around. Population crash. There's something I want to just get into about this all-important point about when will people stop pulling away from this? When will we have to kind of, what will cause us all to do in a much smaller scale what happened in the 1930s when there were people like me and you and others that were warning about Adolf Hitler and about the rise of fascism in the world. And people were too busy with the economic troubles of the time to give it any idea, and a lot of people were poo-pooed. In fact, there was a famous Nostradamus, Edward Fontbrun, who even foresaw the fall of the Maginot Line, and he was called a Nazi sympathizer and a propagandist until it happened. So we're in that mode now of the denial. But there's going to come a critical mass, and that's kind of what I try to use judicial political astrology to find out in the reading of the world. When is the moment that people, and this is positive because it's very positive when your house is smoking, that rather than think positive thoughts and watch television and kind of do everything but smell the smoke, which means it's about to burst into flames, there comes this moment where the people in the house called Earth say, where there's smoke, there's fire, and we're going to drop our little dramas and stuff. They're no longer precious anymore because we're threatened, and then you roll up your sleeves and take care of business. And just like with what happened with World War II, which could have been absolutely prevented, the human race then as well as now have to actually get confronted with the war. At that time, it was a war against fascism. This time it's the war against human stupidity, and a little more subtle and existential, but there it is. And when the forests are on fire and when things, and this is all going to start rapidly increasing in the next, now that we're in the 2020s, basically the first half of the 2020s will reach a crescendo by the middle of the 2020s, where people, in the middle of this next new decade, the human race will rise to this danger. But they're rising very late.
Late. Well, of course, we're rising late to the danger because we always do that. I mean, we're kind of muddle through species. But the thing about us that I have faith in is we muddle through. We do it. And there are, for example, a lot of scientists around the world and scientific groups and companies are thinking to themselves, my God, if we could solve this problem, we'd make trillions of dollars. And so there are many, many big time research projects to do amazing things like to draw carbon dioxide out of the atmosphere. There's even one company which is ready to deploy, if you can believe it, artificial trees in cities, which when turned on, pull carbon dioxide out of the air, right out of the air. And there are unbelievable battery technologies coming along. IBM has just now announced a battery technology that's based on, I believe, seaweed or seawater, which means that you're not going to be having to mine for ever diminishing lithium anymore. And this battery charges in just a few minutes, meaning that we will, within 20 years, I think that the whole internal combustion infrastructure is going to be over, and we're going to be literally breaking our addiction to oil. So I have a lot of hope for the future. I just feel that we all need to have the realization that we can do stuff, and we are doing stuff. And instead of just turning away from it, let's look at it and see what kind of innovations we can do. Let's have an an optimistic view of this catastrophe so that we can get through it. Because if we just bellyache about it, we're just going to hide our heads in the sand until it's too late.
Well, here's the formula.
Wait a minute. We got to do another break, darn it.
Okay.
We're going to do another break. When we get back, I'm going to start to talk about what the role of visitors are going to play in this, but we're not going to talk about climate change the whole time simply because I can't stand it. I have grandkids and I am just with them over Christmas. And, you know, it's hard. It's hard for anyone, to face this stuff. So we'll be right back.
I do have something very positive to say in the next segment about this. So I will leave it on a positive note.
Oh, good. Well, we'll be right back. So folks, get ready for a positive note from both of us. We'll be right back. For this break, I'd like to talk about A New World, my new book, which is getting great reviews on Amazon. It's available on Amazon, on Apple Books, on Kobo, and practically everywhere in the world that ebooks are sold, even in China. So if you are listening abroad, go to your local ebook retailer and you can find A New World. If you're here in the U.S., Barnes & Noble, Kobo, Amazon are all waiting for you. Plus, you can get the paperback on Barnes & Noble and on Amazon. And as always, if you want me to sign your paperback, just send a copy of it to Whitley Strieber at 1112 Montana Avenue, Santa Monica, California, 90403. Include a stamped, self-addressed return envelope, and I will sign your copy immediately and return it to you. I love to do that. Plus, if you have questions about the book, write me at whitley@strieber.com. Or if you're a subscriber, come to the chat room on Wednesday nights at 7. I'm available. A New World. It's an important, valuable book. Look it over everywhere books are sold. And if you want to get it into your local retailer, just ask them to order it. Okay, we're talking to John Hoag. We are just about to conclude our dirge about climate change with a positive vision. So, John, I've talked about some of the technologies that I believe you can see in the insight section on unknowncountry.com, and there are more coming down the pike all the time. What is the positive side of your outlook?
Well, in my book on the climate change prophecies, I'm also listing exactly all these things. For instance, like the artificial cartilage membrane that you're talking about that could literally be put in every river system as it goes into the ocean and create electricity. That's just one. That was the IBM thing. The other things that are going on, I have a plethora of those, because the important thing is to see there is a precedent to what's happening. The last great planetary crisis was the Depression and World War II. We got into it late, but once people got into it, the amount of creativity in the human race had never been so sudden and vastly changing. And so by the middle of this new decade, when the world finally, and perhaps even earlier, when the world realizes that we must fight this, human beings will see it as a fire rather than just a smoking situation, and they will move to put out the fire. And so when that critical mass of understanding is the survival of the species happens, and it will happen, then you will see a repetition of a rhyme of history that created the arsenal of democracy in the world that is literally what ended the Depression and caused the incredible prosperity of the human race up to this point since World War II. A similar retooling of the industries of the world will employ everyone for another 50, 60 years.
Oh, yeah.
In a similar way. And it will be, I call it the arsenal of ecology. And it's where we literally restore the ecology. We will learn through this process of the next several hundred years, even, of terraforming our own planet, that out of this is also in the book, that when all the collective visions of what happens after the worst blow of all this is that a better human race is coming from the seed of those who survive this, that it's and that human race creates a golden age.
Yeah, the human race is, I think, I believe that it's going to win. I think we will survive this. And when we, there may be a cost in lives. I can't deny that. But when we do, then we're going to enter a whole new way of being, because consciousness is expanding so dramatically. You know, in my book, A New World, I talk a lot about the way the barrier between the living and the dead is falling. And the reason it is falling is that the visitors are here and they don't have that barrier. In their worlds, in their lives, it's already fallen. And they, by bringing themselves here, they also bring themselves in a spiritual and physical form. And we see that, and we realize that there is, that both forms are real, and we began to change our whole approach. And it is, it, what's so amazing is, like I talked about in after, Anne and I talked about in Afterlife Revolution, which was after all written with her as co-author while after she was dead physically. So, and provably so. So I think we have amazing potential, and we're going to go in some completely and totally new directions. And I want to return to that in a little while in the show in a slightly different way, because in the third half hour of the show, one of the things I want to talk about is the visitors and their vision of the world, as it were, but, because they're prophets too. I don't think they're all that good. I mean, I hope they're not. But in any case, they have a stake in this as well, a huge stake in it. They have a stake in us. And so, but we're not going to talk about that now. Rather, what I want to talk about now, I want to go into what one of the most fascinating aspects of John's work is. He is a really top drawer astrologer. And, I mean, you do it all. You're a prophet. You're an expert on prophets. You're not only an expert on prophets, but you can, one of the few people I've ever heard of who can actually read Nostradamus's texts as they were written in ancient French. And to top it all off, you are a very good astrologer.
And thank you. It just works for me, I think, probably from past lives. It seems to be something very old and familiar, this divination technique. And it's a very interesting year we've entered in 2020 that begins this process of two things. This is the final good year for corporate hegemony to take over the world. But the tide turns at the end of this year when Saturn leaves Capricorn into the sign of revolution and the sign that is the sign of the new era. Basically, in 2020, we begin a three-step wave that will truly bring us into the full Aquarian Age influence, much more than the Piscean Age still has on us, which is also very important in moving the human race collectively into a fight to save themselves successfully. But, the darkest night before the dawn is the situation that's coming, where basically when this pattern happened another time when Saturn moved out of Taurus in the 1940s, it was a time when fascism then, as now, seemed unstoppable. It's corporate now. Because of all the Capricornian influences involved in it. But one by one, Saturn first at the end of December of 2020, and then in 2024, Pluto, and then finally these two leave Capricorn, and then the ultimate key planet in all of this is Uranus in Taurus, is in its fall, which means it is in the last sign in the world it feels comfortable being in. And this, by the way, is the ruler of the Aquarian Age, Uranus. Sudden change in innovation, revolutionary thinking. And the intriguing thing about this is that we're also seeing Jupiter enter where is Jupiter going these days? I think it's in Capricorn, and that is it also in its fall. So what that means is that between middle of January and then again in April and then again in November, a period, these are the windows for an economic upheaval to show up a little earlier than I think it might. And this will be the first big shock that kind of awakens people from their stupor and their sleep. And you will see a lot of a beginning of a rebellion against this kind of status quo world that we've kind of locked ourselves into, where too much of the world's wealth is just literally sitting around in a few billionaires' banks doing nothing. That the economic system, because this is where it hits. And so we're heading for some major shift in the economy, a major recession. But the good news is there's a lot more lifeboats available than during the 1930s, so to speak. Other options that, in fact, entire nations around the world are already starting to set up a gold standard economy again. China, Russia, India, Germany has joined. Lots of other countries are joining into this to create a precious metal-based system and get off the fiat economy. That wasn't happening in the 30s. And so the other thing, too, is that there's evolutions in electronic money that are kind of in their Wild West phase, but that is also going as the need for person-to-person independent wealth transactions becomes greater, especially in a world where interest rates are actually not going just to zero, but negative interest rates, which is insane, because it takes all value of time and investment out of investing in anything. So basically, and it also is, we're in this QE4, a quantitative easing that's been hidden in the repo markets, which are, long story short, are these markets that do low interest overnight transactions between banks, which kind of, long story short, keeps things going as long as those interest rates are 1 or 2%. But they've jumped up into billions of dollars a night, and they've been doing it since August. And that means that this economy, which is being touted as being really great, greater than ever, everybody's back to work, well, it's being pumped into by funny money, that fiat economy, which is not based in any value system, so it can just keep printing and printing and printing forever.
Yeah, and so far it's been okay, but it is not always okay. We've done that. We've done this before many times. Yeah. Many countries have.
Well, and you'll see that it's gone the wrong direction. Now, if they were going to do this temporarily, it should have all gone into the real economy. But none of this has gone into all the QEs have not gone at all into the real economy. They've gone into the financial economy. And guess what? Is it any surprise then that we're always hovering near or about 30,000 in the Dow Jones? It's literally just pouring immense wealth to a very small number of people who are playing a casino game in the Dow Jones. And it is reaching its critical mass because we did not actually reform anything, as I unfortunately predicted we wouldn't, in the 2008 recession. The systemic problems and strains have not been reformed. They've been enhanced. And so it literally, we are heading for a recession. It is going to most likely hit after the election, not long after the election, but after. But I wouldn't rule out some very strong kind of repeats of the echo of 2007, which kind of strongly hinted it was coming in 08 until the boom really lowered. We have the similar pattern here with 2020 and 2021. Now,
okay, you called it in 2007, so you're calling it now again.
Yeah, I'm saying that we could see some in May, April, and again, in just before the election, in autumn, you could see some strong indicators. And I'm actually hopeful that because we've all gone through all the Fannie Mae, oh, everything's fine in 2007, and everything's wonderful, and you know the whole the markets. I mean, CNBC is still doing this, where they're just they're it's all happy days and everything's wonderful. But there's definitely other economists out there that have been accurate before, and they're agreeing with me in that in a more intuitive sense that in my side that. We're repeating 2007 now, where it's there if people want to look at it, if their business news is going to tell them about it, but the real crash like 2008 happens in early 2021. Now, the IMF might try to do a special funny money thing that they do and save the federal banks of different countries from this one because they cannot actually pump that kind of money in again. And so that might give us another 11 months after that. And then in 2022, you really get the big hit of the fiat economy basically collapsing. Now, again, it's a, it sounds bad, but it's, it pressures the world to do something that people used to do in biblical times called the Jubilee. There is, the good news is that this debt is not going to be paid off. It's too big.
No longer is it possible to conceive of paying off. The last time we came close to paying off the federal debt was during the Clinton administration. And then after that, we began this business of pumping dollars into the economy because the first thing that happened was that after the 2008 collapse, there was no choice. It was either pump money into the economy or collapse completely. I mean, we'd be worse off than in the Depression. And so it worked, fortunately, and we're still going on. But the question is, how much value is the economy creating in comparison to the amount, the number of dollars that are being created? The difference between those two things is the deficit.
Yeah.
And obviously we're not creating as much value as we should. Therefore, the deficit will eventually catch up with us. It's simple economics.
Yeah, it's simple in that everybody talks about the $22 trillion in public debt, but nobody's talking about the $41 trillion in private. That the 332 million Americans have.
And
to
I
deal with.
Very well remember what happened in 2008 when companies, these frankly horrible companies that had credit cards, banks mostly, would jump up people's interest rates while the economy was collapsing. And so someone who had like a 14% interest rate on their credit card debt at that point when they were becoming unable to pay it off were suddenly changed to a 28%. And then, you know, it was unbelievably stupid. But, you know, they're banks. As my father used to say, banks are stupid. That's what they do. And he was right. He was a clever guy. And he was absolutely right about that. But that could happen again very easily.
Yes, but here's the thing that's the new random element in it that forecasters like me try to grab that's beyond the pattern. It's going to bring up a big surprise. There's going to be such a public outcry against this, literally on the streets. I mean, it's already happening. I don't know how many people watch good international news sources, but there I have never seen in all my 65 years so many people on the streets across the world protesting this issue of too much profit being stagnating in too few hands and not being invested back in the economy, or the theme of people saying our like we were talking about in Australia, our leaders are not listening to us. They're listening to people who fill their pockets with money. And this is not just here. It's all over the planet this is rising. And in the 2020s with these falls of planets, the rebellions will be historic, and what could happen is it literally comes to a point where the people say, erase it. We can't pay it, so just do a year zero and take the ledgers free of all this debt, and we start all over with a more responsible system. That kind of stuff can happen when Saturn leaves into Aquarius at the end of this year, and then Pluto leaves Capricorn as well into Aquarius, the revolutionary sign, in 2024, and then Uranus gets out of its fall in Taurus in 2026, goes into Gemini, which then creates a number of these trines, positive harmonic ideas with all these major outer planets, which define an era where literally by the mid-decade, people are ready to change. People are ready to fight these things and let go of these stupid systems. It really is the first big injection of what the next 20 centuries of the Aquarian Age is all about.
That's fascinating, because that's very similar to what the visitors have been saying about this very thing. And when I say saying, they don't whisper to me. I kind of become aware of it. And that is that there will come a time when the world cancels its debts entirely.
Yeah.
The planet does. And we start all over again.
It's a beautiful release. It'll be a tremendous lifting of a terrible burden of 500 years of a certain kind of economy, and since 71, ultimately foolish clown economy, fiat economy. And it will be a great release of burden off the whole world. And that will better help be filled by a creativity of, let's rebuild stuff. Let's rethink what it's like to be human beings and our role on this planet. And I tell you, by the 2026 period, it will begin. The astrology very much favors this very positive shift, the human axis shift from an auto-suicidal species to a new man.
Yeah, exactly. And because we will have learned a great lesson when that happens. It will have been a hard time. But I just think we're going to get through it. And I think that mankind is so intelligent and so capable that we will get through it. We are going to interrupt the extinction event eventually.
It's only when it happens. It's only when it's faced. It's only when it's your house is on fire that you build a better house. So in a way, a positive way to look at it, I think every society in the galaxies that has probably come to this point at some point in their evolution where they become so powerful, intelligent, that they alter the climates of their worlds. And so the test then is to go, hey, look how powerful we are. Look how we can actually change things. Let's just redirect that in a way that makes nature beautiful and our lives more beautiful. You know, and I also bring that up big in this climate book, that it's like, rather than be down on it, I mean, first you got to look at the dangers, but then you got to look at the other side of it. It says, hey, this is probably a sign that we're ready to make this evolutionary jump, because if we don't, we're not here. So we will. And even my own teacher, Osho, used to say, and he was a very early proponent of these dangers, these unravelings. As far back as 1983, he wrote a prophecy about it called the Noah's Ark of Consciousness Prophecy, where it was really about how there's no ark that's going to save us this time. We have to become conscious. We have to be the eye and the center of the storms that are coming.
We are the ark.
Yeah, we are the ark. And that actually resonates with a lot of mystical Kabbalism and all who never saw a third temple being built. Their whole concept, and I'm in contact with the Kabbalists in Israel and others, their whole concept is that, and also Rabbi Ariel Zadok, who's a really amazing guy, deals with Kabbalism, a good friend of mine, it's really about the third temple being inside your being.
Yes, the temple within us, Frala Lubitsch.
Yes.
Right. The Temple in Man, I think his book was called.
Yes.
And this is where we're going with the visitors. That's what they're all about, is opening the doors to that temple. And despite the fact that the government is terrified of them.
Here, and just one quick thing to interject, it's seated. I'm also redoing my book on the last pope and the St. Malachi prophecies, given that Pope Francis is actually the last pope in his list. So I did a book in 1998, and I'm also working on that, on as well as the other projects right now, and it'll be out next year. And the thing that it deals with is this beautiful prophecy from the Christian mystic Joachim di Fiore, who lived in Calabria. He was a near contemporary of St. Malachi, a medieval Irish prophet who's purported to have done these Latin mottos. And I end with him in this book because he talks about the three stages of Judeo-Christian evolution as three ages that are like the Trinity. The 20 centuries of the Father, the Old Testament biblical step, followed by the 20 centuries of the Son, Jesus, and the 2,000 years that has happened and ended just recently. Now we're entering what he calls the 20 centuries of the Holy Spirit. And that exactly connects with the idea of no temples are going to be built on the Temple Mount. They're going to be built in the heart.
In the heart, exactly. And maybe we should conclude this first hour where we, our free dreamlanders leave us now with that idea that this is about the human mind and the human heart. It is about consciousness. And those of us who work in this field are all planning a big win here. I mean, we're going to go through down a rocky road, but on the other side, there is a new mankind and a new world. I believe that. That's why my new book's called A New World. And in the next half hour, we're going to be talking about that, about the visitors and their prophecies. And John and I have talked very little about that aspect of this and over the years. And I'm going to get into that with John a little bit, because there have been some very specific prophecies, one of which happened many years ago, and is now I'm beginning to finally understand after 30 years what it all meant. And it's quite shocking and startling and amazing. And there are others as well, many of them. And I'm going to leave you with this thought, folks, and then we're going to go on break. That is that one of the things that has been most persistently said in my relationship with them is it will come upon them unaware. And we're going to be talking about what that it could be. So free dreamlanders, I hope this tempts you into subscribing. That's the general idea here. And subscribers, get set for a really interesting third hour. Not that the third half hour, not the first two half hours haven't been, they have been, but we're going to go down an unusual path now. So, free dreamlanders, thank you so much for being with us, and subscribers, we'll just keep on keeping on.
You've been listening to Dreamland. Be sure to tune in again next week. Dreamland is brought to you by UnknownCountry.com and its family of subscribers. Unknown Country was founded by Ann Streber. Our news editor is Matthew Frizzell. Our coordinator is Amy Safrankova. Whitley Streber is your Dreamland host, and I'm your announcer, Ted Alexander. Thank you for listening.